This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. In today's program, the concept of freedom of the press, the protection of whistleblowers, and the sanctity of the international concept of political asylum. We will hear the speech given this weekend by WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange from the balcony of the Ecuadorian embassy in London. We'll also speak live with Robert Naiman of justforeignpolicy.org, and we will hear a record of Julian Assange's first encounter with President Rafael Correa of Ecuador, the nation that has granted him political asylum, even though he remains ensconced inside their London embassy. All that and more. This is 5 o'clock shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and there were many developments over the weekend in regard to the case of Julian Assange. He is still inside the Embassy of Ecuador in the city of London, where he is threatened with arrest and extradition to Sweden. There are concerns that a Swedish extradition would result in his ultimate transfer to the United States, where there are now multiple indications that there is a sealed or secret indictment against him. We begin today's program with the full content of Julian Assange's speech overnight.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I am here today because I cannot be there with you today. But thank you for coming. Thank you for your resolve, your generosity of spirit. On Wednesday night, after a threat was sent to this embassy and police descendant of this building, you came out in the middle of the night to watch over it. And you brought the world's eyes with you. Inside this embassy after dark, I could hear teams of police swarming up into the building through its internal fire escape. But I knew there would be witnesses, and that is because of you. If the UK did not throw away the Vienna Convention the other night, it is because the world was watching. And the world was watching because you were watching. So the next time somebody tells you that it is pointless to defend those rights that we hold dear, remind them of your vigil in the dark before the Embassy of Ecuador. Remind them how, in the morning, the sun came up on a different world and a courageous Latin American nation took a stand for justice. And so to those brave people, I thank President Correa for the courage he has shown in considering and in granting me political asylum. And I also thank the government, and in particular Foreign Minister Ricardo Patino, who upheld the Ecuadorian constitution and its notion of universal citizenship in their consideration of my asylum. And to the Ecuadorian people for supporting and defending this constitution. And I also have a debt gratitude to the staff of this embassy whose families live in London and who have shown me hospitality and kindness despite the threats we all receive. This this Friday, there will be an emergency meeting of the foreign ministers of Latin America in Washington, D.C., to address this very situation. And so I am grateful to those people and governments of Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, El Salvador, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Argentina, Peru, Venezuela, and to all other Latin American countries who have come out to defend the right to asylum. And to the people of the United States, the United Kingdom, Sweden, and Australia, who have supported me in strength, even when their governments have not. And to those wiser heads in government who are still fighting for justice, your day will come. To the staff, supporters, and sources of WikiLeaks, whose courage and commitment and loyalty has seen no equal. To my family and to my children who have been denied their father, forgive me, we will be reunited soon. As WikiLeaks stands under threat, so does the freedom of expression and the health of all our societies. We must use this moment to articulate the choice that is before the government of the United States of America. Will it return to and reaffirm the values, the revolutionary values it was founded on? Or will it lurch off the precipice, dragging us all into a dangerous and oppressive world in which journalists fall silent under the fear of prosecution and citizens must whisper in the dark? I say it must turn back. I ask President Obama to do the right thing. The United States must renounce its witch hunt against WikiLeaks. The United States must dissolve its FBI investigation. The United States must vow that it will not seek to prosecute our staff or our supporters. The United States must pledge before the world that it will not pursue journalists for shining a light on the secret crimes of the powerful. There must be no more foolish talk about prosecuting any media organization, be it WikiLeaks or be it the New York Times. The US administration's war on whistleblowers must end. Thomas Drake, William Beebe, John Kerouac, and other heroic whistleblowers must be pardoned or compensated for the hardships they have endured as servants of the public record. And to the Army private who remains in a military prison in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, who was found by the United Nations to have endured months of torturous detention in Quantico, Virginia, and who has yet, after 2 years in prison, to see a trial, he must be released. Bradley Manning must be released. If Bradley Manning did as he is accused, he is a hero, and an example to all of us, and one of the world's foremost political prisoners. Bradley Manning must be released. On Wednesday, Bradley Manning spent his 815th day of detention without trial. The legal maximum is 120 days. On Thursday, my friend Nabil Rajab, president of the Bahrain Human Rights Center, was sentenced to 3 years in prison for a tweet. On Friday, a Russian band was sentenced to 2 years in jail for a political performance. There is unity in the oppression. There must be absolute unity and determination in the response. Thank you.
The sound of WikiLeaks founder and publisher Julian Assange speaking this weekend in London from the balcony of the Ecuador embassy. During the speech, he thanked all of his supporters who were quite vociferous in their presence at that event. He also thanked the president and ambassador of Ecuador, President Rafael Correa, and others, and he made special note of private Bradley Manning, who is accused of assisting in the release of the cables of the State Department that were so world-shaking during their release through WikiLeaks. He also made acknowledgement of the arrest and sentencing of Russian performance artists Pussy Riot. He also referred to a Bahraini journalist that had been suppressed, as well as the arrest of New York Times reporters. And he is in a limbo zone because the British authorities have threatened to arrest him and extradite him to Sweden, and then, by all reasonable belief, to the United States. So Julian Assange is literally in the situation where he cannot get there from here. Joining us now here is the director of Just Foreign Policy, Robert Naiman. And Robert Naiman and his institution, along with others, were very instrumental in circulating a global petition for political asylum for Julian Assange, and that has been accomplished. Robert Naiman, how do you think the campaign stands at this point in time?
Well, step one complete. Obviously, we're delighted by the Ecuadorian government's decision. This is the decision that we wanted, for them to grant political asylum to Julian Assange. So they answered our appeal, obviously not only ours. And, you know, the whole time I thought that it was a sympathetic audience for the request. But, you know, we saw that they were getting tremendous pressure from the global north and the media of the global north. So we wanted to raise our voices so they wouldn't be isolated. So step one complete. Of course, Julian Assange is still in the embassy. The British have threatened to raid the embassy, invade and arrest Assange. They've since backed off of that. But nonetheless, he's still there. The British have said that they won't give safe passage. They won't recognize diplomatic asylum. So what we have to look forward to at the moment is a continued stalemate and standoff with the British, on the one hand, unable to arrest him, but the Ecuadorians, on the other hand, unable to get him to Ecuador. And with both sides saying that they want a negotiated solution, but with the two sides having completely different sense of what that looks like. The British have said they want a negotiated solution, but the result has to be what they want, which is to arrest Assange and send him to Sweden, essentially without any giving any kind of assurance or guarantee. And Ecuadorians, success for the Ecuadorians would be either getting Assange to Ecuador or getting assurances from the Swedes and the Brits that if he goes to Sweden voluntarily, he won't be extradited to the United States.
We'll be speaking about exactly those nuances, but there is an item in the speech that Julian Assange gave, saying that there had been overnight before his speech the rumblings and clanking of British police officials on the fire escape of the building that houses the Ecuador embassy. Do you suppose that there is a contingency plan for some kind of physical operation? Or let's just be hypothetical and say, what if there were some fire in the basement and the building had to be evacuated? That would not be a denial of the diplomatic status of the embassy, but it might cause Julian Assange to leave the national territory of Ecuador. Do you think that backdoor planning may include contingencies like this by the British officials?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they have contingencies. After all, you know, if you ask the Pentagon, do you have a contingency for a U.S. invasion of Iran or bombing Iran, they'll answer, you know, we plan for everything. That's what we do. And presumably, since the British have put out that, you know, they can envision a scenario in which they would invade the embassy and take him by force, there's somebody in the British government who's been given the task of planning what that would look like. I think at the moment, that seems unlikely because there's been such a tremendous global pushback from Latin America, around the world, from people in Britain, from former U.S. British diplomats saying that, you know, if the British government does this, if they invade the embassy, you can pretty much hang it up for British diplomacy because it would be impossible to be a British diplomat anywhere in the world.
Well, there's another issue here. The possibility of Julian Assange's being brought to the United States. There are indications from the recently WikiLeaked emails of the Strategic Forecasting Company that suggest that in the belief of their leadership, there is a sealed indictment for Julian Assange in the United States. Now, added to that, Robert Nayman, over the weekend, it was reported by the Australian Sun newspaper that the Australian Foreign Office had sent cables or communiques from their embassy in Washington to the national headquarters. And in those cables, they indicated that it was their suspicion that there is indeed such an indictment. And one of the cables actually said that the United States government cannot legally tell us that we have an indictment. But the overall tone and indication was that the Australian diplomats do believe there is such an indictment. What do you make of this latest development in regard to Julian Assange's case?
Well, we already know from the U.S. press that there's been a U.S. grand jury investigating WikiLeaks. What was most striking about the recent press reports from Australia was the gap between what Australian officials were saying publicly and what they were telling each other. Publicly, Australian officials, when questioned, have said, oh, we don't have any information indicating that the U.S. is going after Julian Assange, whereas what they were telling each other is, we expect that the U.S. is going after Julian Assange. And in fact, we're trying to talk to the U.S. about that, and we're asking the U.S. to please give us warning before they, you know, do anything formal to go after him. So this window on the internal deliberations of the Australian authorities, I think we can extrapolate from that, because we see the same pattern in the statements and actions of U.S. officials, and the statements and actions of Swedish and British officials. But the public line is that this British-Swedish legal drama, has nothing to do with WikiLeaks, has nothing to do with the United States. And the U.S., the same line. You know, we're not Victoria Nuland last week, State Department spokeswoman. Oh, you know, that has nothing to do with us. I mean, that's something between the British and the Swedes. But then when you look at the communications with these governments, and with each other, and other signs and things that are reported in the press, a very different story emerges that indicates that the U.S. is very engaged, that they're talking to the Australians about this, they're talking to the British and the Swedes about this. So all of this evidence leads to, you know, very strong grounds to doubt the sincerity of the official story and to substantiate concern that the long-run plan, one way or another, Julian Assange into U.S. custody and take advantage of any means to bring that about.
Robert Naiman is director of Just Foreign Policy at the website justforeignpolicy.org. He has long been an analyst of international and political and diplomatic policy. And there are so many wrinkles in the case of Julian Assange legally, not only diplomatically, in regard to the obtaining and denial of political asylum, but there are questions that stick out like sore thumbs about his legal status. And Robert, I know you've been following those. Take some time to tell us what those questions are in regard to the British insistence on extraditing him to Sweden when there has been no crime indicted in his case there. The denial of the Swedish authorities, they say they want to interrogate Julian Assange, yet they refuse to come and do exactly that. And then again, there's the backdoor trapdoor of the extradition to the United States. The British have not agreed not to do that. Can you take us through all of those contradictory issues?
Yes, so the big picture is this. There are two legal cases involving Julian Assange. One case is a case in Sweden that arose from a visit there and two complaints that were brought by two Swedish women that were first dropped by a prosecutor for lack of evidence and then reinstated by another prosecutor after political pressure. And they have a more kind of entrepreneurial prosecution system there, where there isn't just, you know, when one prosecutor drops the charges, that's not the end of the story. Another prosecutor can volunteer to take on the charges. So that is one story. And then you have this other story, which is the U.S. legal case against WikiLeaks. The U.S. has been relatively quiet about this recently, but if you go back to 2010, you see it was openly reported in the U.S. media, the Justice Department is trying to figure out how to prosecute WikiLeaks. A grand jury has been impaneled in Virginia. Attorney General Holder said, you know, this is not saber-rattling. We are investigating how to prosecute WikiLeaks. And the official story is that these two cases, have nothing to do with each other. This is the story of the Swedish government or the British government and the U.S. government. There's no relationship between these two things. That's the official story. Okay, so that all the Swedes and the Brits care about is just completing the Swedish legal process. Well, where that story breaks down is when you look at all the ways that people have proposed to allow the Swedish legal process to go forward without entangling it in the risk of extraditing Julian Assange to the United States in this other case. For example, Julian Assange volunteered to be questioned by the Swedish prosecutor in London. The Swedes refused. Since going into the embassy, the Ecuadorian government invited the Swedish prosecutor to come to their embassy and question Julian Assange in the embassy. The Swedes refused. People asked, why? You know, why do you refuse this? You've done it before in other cases. Your prosecutors traveled to other countries to question witnesses and suspects. No real answer. Oh, it's not legal. It's not legal under the European arrest warrant. Why in these other cases? No answer. So that's the first question people have. Why wouldn't you just, you want this case to proceed, which has been going on for 2 years? Why wouldn't you just, and the case can't proceed until you question Julian Assange. Why wouldn't you send your prosecutor to London to question Julian Assange? The second question, why won't the Swedes promise not to extradite Julian Assange to the United States if he voluntarily goes to Sweden? He is offered, I will voluntarily go to Sweden if the Swedes will promise not to send me to the United States. The Swedes have refused to do that. They've refused to explain why they refused to do that. Third question, why won't the British say that they will oppose any extradition request from Sweden to the United States? Under the extradition law, under the extradition treaty, a country that does an extradition, you know, it's supposed to be a one-off from extraditing this person for this legal procedure in this country
When that's done, the extradition is done. But there is a provision in the law that says, well, if the extraditing country wants to, they can waive any objection to extradition to a third country. So people have asked the British government, okay, you want this to go forward? Why won't you promise that you will not agree to the extradition of Julian Assange from Sweden to the United States? No answer. And finally, of course, we have the question of the United States, which could end the whole story by saying, we will never try to extradite Julian Assange from Sweden to the United States. Again, no answer, no assurance. Not only have they not said, been willing to say this publicly, but the Ecuadorians asked them directly, you know, what are your intentions? Are you willing to say that you will not try to extradite Julian Assange from Sweden to the United States? They refused. So we have these four paths to resolve this issue. Two in the hands of the Swedes, one in the hands of the British, one in the hands of the United States. All these paths have been blocked. So all of these, you know, we don't know, and we can't know what's in the hearts of these officials. Unless, you know, somebody turns up a smoking gun leaked memo where they confess, ha, 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 we tricked you. But what we do know, what's in the public record, is that every path that people have come up with to resolve this issue has been refused. So that lends credence to the suspicions that people have that there's a significant danger that Julian Assange goes to Sweden, where he'll eventually wind up is in U.S. prison. And given the risk, you know, everybody sees how they treated Bradley Manning, and then he's facing a life sentence for leaking these documents, or allegedly leaking these documents. So, therefore, you know, you talk about a well-founded fear of persecution. They had Bradley Manning for months in solitary confinement. Julian Assange and his supporters have every right to fear what could happen to him if he goes to Sweden, and there's no assurance that he won't be extradited to the United States.
Robert Naiman of JustForeignPolicy.org, final question for you. Julian Assange has indicated that he might appeal to the International Court in regard to his situation. What viability do you see in that, and upon what grounds might it occur?
Yeah, actually, to the World Court, the International Court of Justice at The Hague, two reasons. First of all, the International Court of Justice, the World Court, has jurisdiction over the 1961 Vienna Convention. This is the treaty that Britain would be violating if it invaded the Ecuadorian embassy. And so Ecuador could seek an injunction at the World Court blocking Britain from doing that. That would not only, you know, protect the embassy and protect Julian from the British authorities, but take away their threat, the British threat of doing that. The second thing is the question of Britain's obligations under international humanitarian refugee law. The International Convention specifies, you know, what the conditions are for dealing with refugees who seek political asylum, and the Ecuadorians could seek an injunction in the World Court requiring the British to provide safe passage for Julian Assange from London to Ecuador. And one hopes that really the ideal solution is for the British and the Swedes to negotiate in good faith and give assurances that they won't extradite him, Assange, to the United States. And one hopes that the prospect of an adversarial ruling and an adverse ruling in the World Court would compel the British and the Swedes to negotiate in good faith.
So we may yet see another chapter in the International Court for Justice or the World Court. Robert Naiman, thank you so much for being with us on this breaking story today. And you are the director of Just Foreign Policy at the website justforeignpolicy.org. And I certainly commend our listeners' attention to your work there. And congratulations on your international campaign for asylum.
It's always good to be with you.
Same here. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the feet. There's too much confusion, and I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine. Plowmen dig my herd, but none of them along the line know what any of this is worth. They just don't know what it's worth. Ooh. Now, there's no reason for us to get excited. The thief, he kindly spoke. There's many here among us who think that life is just a joke. But you and me, we've been through that, and this is not our fate. So let us not talk falsely now, for the hour is getting so late. Oh, it's getting so late.
In regard to the matter of Julian Assange, there must be some way out of here. All Along the Watchtower, Bob Dylan's song performed by the Brothers and Sisters. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI, where we are produced today by Thiago Barroso and engineered by Joyce Jones. I'm Robert Knight in New York, and we conclude today's program with a significant historical tidbit. It is the first known encounter between Julian Assange and President Rafael Correa, the president of Ecuador, the nation that has granted Julian Assange political asylum, even though he remains contained within the Ecuadorian embassy inside London. And this is an excerpt from the program that existed earlier this year, produced by Julian Assange, called The World Tomorrow. And here we get to hear some of the interplay between the publisher of WikiLeaks and the president of Ecuador.
I'm Julian Assange.
Roger, I'll get you in the space.
Editor of WikiLeaks. We've exposed the world's secrets.
All these documents belong to the United States government.
Been attacked by the powerful.
United States strongly condemns.
Hey, quit asking questions.
He broke the law.
Illegally shoot the son of a...
For 500 days now, I've been detained without charge. But that hasn't stopped us. Today, we're on a quest for revolutionary ideas that can change the world tomorrow. With Chavez and Lula out of the public eye, a new generation of Latin American leaders has arisen. This week, I am joined by the president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa. Correa is a left-wing populist who has changed the face of Ecuador. But unlike his predecessors, he holds a PhD in economics. According to US embassy cables, Correa is the most popular president in Ecuador's democratic history. But in 2010, he was taken hostage in an attempted coup d'etat. He blames the coup attempt on corrupt media and has launched a controversial counteroffensive. Correa says the media defines what reforms are possible. I want to know, is he justified? And what is his vision for Latin America?
Is he hearing me?
I can hear you, President Correa.
Le puedo escuchar, Presidente Correa.
Hi, nice
you
to
too.
Meet
you. You too. Sí.
Where are you, in England?
I am in England under house arrest now for 500 days.
500 days?
With no charge.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sí.
Sí, es mejor traducir, María Luisa.
Yeah.
I like a little bit more Spanish, you know.
Oh, okay. So let's see if we can do that. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Action. What is the Ecuadorian perspective on the United States? The sort of long perspective of US involvement. I'm not asking for a caricature of the United States, but what do Ecuadorian people think about the United States and its involvement in Latin America and in Ecuador?
Well, as Evo Morales says, the only country that can be sure never to have a coup d'etat is the United States, because it hasn't got a US embassy. In any event, I'd like to say that one of the reasons that led to police discontent was the fact that we cut all the funding the US embassy provided to the police. Before, and even a year after we took office, we took a while to correct this. Before, there were whole police units, key units, fully funded by the US embassy, whose officers in command were chosen by the US ambassador and paid by the US. And so we have increased considerably the police's pay. However, as their salaries were coming from somewhere else, they didn't even notice. We did away with all that. But there are some who still long for those times, which will never come back. Relating to the US, ours has always been a relationship based on affection and friendship. But in the framework of mutual respect and sovereignty, I lived in the US for 4 years, have 2 academic degrees from there. I love and admire the American people a great deal. Believe me, the last thing I'd be is anti-American. However, I will always call a spade a spade. And if there are international US policies that are detrimental to our country, or even to that of Latin America, I will denounce them strongly. And I will never, ever allow my country's sovereignty to be affected by them.
Your government closed the US base at Malta. Can you tell me why you decided to close this base?
But would you accept having a foreign base set up in your country, Julian? In any case, if the matter is as simple as I once said, okay, it's not a problem to set up a US base in Ecuador. We can give the go-ahead as long as we are granted permission to set up an Ecuadorian military base in Miami. If it's not an issue, they should agree. Are you having a lot of fun with the interview, Julian? I'm glad to hear that. Me too.
I am enjoying your jokes a great deal, yes. President, President Correa, why did you want us to release all the cables?
Those who don't owe anything have nothing to fear. We have nothing to hide. Your WikiLeaks have made us stronger, as the main accusations made by the American embassy were due to our excessive nationalism and defense of the sovereignty of the Ecuadorian government. Indeed, we are nationalists. Indeed, we do defend the sovereignty of our country. On the other hand, WikiLeaks wrote a lot about the goals that the national media pursue, about the power groups who seek help and report to foreign embassies, We have absolutely nothing to fear. Let them publish everything they have about the Ecuadorian government. But you will see how many things about those who oppose the civil revolution in Ecuador will come to light. Things to do with opportunism, betrayal, and being self-serving.
You kicked out the U.S. ambassador to Ecuador as a result of WikiLeaks' publication of cables. Why did you kick her out? It seems to me it would be easier to go, well, I have these cables from this ambassador. I know now how she thinks. Isn't it better to keep the devil you know?
She was told this, but filled with arrogance, she said she had nothing to say. She was a woman totally against our government, a woman of extreme right-wing views who still lived in the Cold War of the 1960s. And what broke the camel's back, the last straw, was WikiLeaks, where she wrote that her own Ecuadorian contacts told her that the chief of the national police was corrupt, and that surely I had given him that post knowing he was corrupt, so that I could control him. The lady ambassador was called and asked to give an explanation, but with all her loftiness, insolence, grandeur, imperial airs she puts on, she said she had nothing to account for. And as we here respect our country, we threw her out. I'd like to say that some months ago, after almost a year of inquiry, Commander Hurtado, falsely accused in that WikiLeaks cable by the ambassador, was found not guilty of all charges. This shows once again how ill-intentioned U.S. officials, due to their ill will towards progressive governments that are seeking change, report on anything groundless, based purely on rumors and gossip provided by their contacts, who are usually people in opposition to our government.
President Correa,
how did you find the Chinese to deal with? They are a big, powerful country. Are you swapping one devil for another in dealing with the Chinese?
First of all, we don't work with devils. If anyone comes up to us as a devil, we simply tell him, no thank you. Secondly, you can see a bit of the selling out, the snobbery, even the neo-colonialism of our elites and certain media. When 60% of our trade and the bulk of the investment were concentrated in the US, and we were left with no money to move our economy forward, there wasn't any issue. Now that we are the country where most of the Chinese investment in the region takes place, it has suddenly become an issue. Because the Chinese aren't that tall or reddish-looking, because they don't have light eyes, they are called devils. Now, enough of that. If even the United States itself is being financed by China, how wonderful it is that it funds Ecuador. It's wonderful that it provides funds for oil extraction, mining, hydroelectric power stations. We are not only getting Chinese funding, we're also attracting investment from Russia, Brazil. We have expanded our markets and our funding sources. However, there are people who were born with a yoke attached to the neck and who prefer to go on with that level of dependency. That's it.
President Correa, as you know, for many years, I have been fighting a fight for freedom of expression, for the right for people to communicate, for the right to publish true information. How is it that your reforms will not lead to the suppression of true information?
Bueno, usted es una muy buena muestra, Julián, de cómo es la prensa.
Well, Julian, you are a good example of what the press is like, as well as these associations like the Inter-American Press Association, which is simply an association of newspapers in Latin America. Many books have been written about your WikiLeaks in Latin America, the last one by two Argentinian authors featuring a country-by-country analysis. And in the case of Ecuador, it shows how, in a shameless way, the media did not publish those cables or news which affected them, For instance, disputes amongst information and news groups. In the end, to avoid being discredited, they reach an agreement not to air their dirty linen in public. I will read you one of the WikiLeaks documents the Ecuadorian press never published. The fact that the press feels free to criticize the government and yet it is unable to do so with a fugitive banker and his family businesses speaks volumes about where power resides in Ecuador. These are the messages made public by WikiLeaks, yet unpublished by the Ecuadorian press. This is just for you to see what we face in Ecuador and Latin America. We believe, my dear Julian, that the only things that should be protected against information sharing and freedom of speech are those set in the international treaties, in the Inter-American Convention on Human Rights, the honor and the reputation of people and the safety of people and the state. The rest, the more people find out about it, the better. You have voiced your fear, recurrent in journalists of good faith, but these are stereotypical fears that the state may restrict freedom of speech. This is hardly ever seen in Latin America. These are just myths. Please, bear in mind that here the media power was, and it probably is, greater than the political power. In fact, it usually has self-serving political, economic, social power, and above all, informative power. And it is the big voters, the powerful legislators, the mighty judges that have set the media agenda. This way, they have subdued governments, presidents, and courts. Let's stop portraying this image of poor and courageous journalists, saint-like media trying to tell the truth, and tyrants, autocrats, and dictators trying to hinder that. It isn't true. It's the other way round. The governments, trying to do something for the majority of the people, are persecuted by journalists who think that by having a pen and a microphone, they can direct even their resentment against you. They often insult and slander out of sheer dislike. These are mass media serving someone's private interests. Please, let the world know about what happens in Latin America. When I took office, there were 7 national TV channels. There wasn't state-owned television. They were all private, and 5 of them belonged to bankers. As you can imagine, if I wanted to take measures against banking in order to prevent, for instance, the crisis and the abuses which are now taking place in Europe, especially in Spain, I had to face a merciless TV campaign aimed at defending their owners' interests, the owners of these TV networks who were the bankers. Let's not fool ourselves. Let's get rid of these false stereotypes depicting wicked governments persecuting saint-like and courageous journalists and news outlets. Often, Julian, it's the other way around. These people, disguised as journalists, are trying to do politics to destabilize our governments so that no change takes place in our region for fear of losing the power they have always flaunted about.
President Correa, I agree with your market description of the media. We have seen this again and again, that big media organizations that we have worked with, like The Guardian, El País, New York Times, and Der Spiegel, have censored our material against our agreements when they published it for political reasons or to protect oligarchs like Timoshenko from the Ukraine, who was hiding her wealth in London, or big corrupt Italian oil companies operating in Kazakhstan. We have proof of this because we know what the original document contains, and we can see what they printed, and we can see what they have removed. But it seems to me that the correct approach to deal with monopolies and duopolies and cartels in a market is to break them up or to make it so it is very easy for new publishers to enter into the market. Shouldn't you create a system that protects the ease of entry into the publishing market so that small publishers and individuals are protected and have no regulation, and that these bigger publishers are broken up or are regulated?
That is what we are trying to do, Julian. For over 2 years, we've had this debate about a new communications law aimed at segmenting the radio and television industry. We only want a third of all radio and television broadcasters to be private and profit-making. Another third should be non-profit and belong to the community. And the remaining third should be state-owned, not run just by central government, but also by local authorities, municipalities and parochial bodies. The process has taken 2 years, and all this despite the fact that this order is part of the constitution approved by voting in 2008, despite the fact that the order was upheld by the Ecuadorian people during last year's referendum. Nevertheless, this new law has been systematically blocked by the big media outlets, the paid legislators they have in the National Assembly who defend their interests, refer to it as the gag law, while the only thing we are trying to do is to make information and social communication and ownership of the media more democratic. But clearly, we face bitter opposition on the part of the media owners and their lobbyists in the Ecuadorian political arena.
And that, Julian Assange speaking with President Correa of Ecuador. At this point in time, he remains inside the Ecuador embassy, and it is unknown when there will be another production of the Julian Assange show called The World Tomorrow. And that concludes today's edition of 5 o'clock Shadow, with production by Thiago Barroso. We welcome your comments and suggestions and questions and leaks with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.